Hi, I'm Vika Aronson, podcast producer for the PBS NewsHour. And before we get back to the show, I want to tell you about another podcast from one of our promotional partners, Unlocking Bryson's Brain from CBC Podcasts. Unlocking Bryson's Brain is the true story of 13-year-old Bryson, who is a happy, loving boy, but a mysterious disease means he can't walk, talk, or feed himself. After years without a diagnosis, genetic scientists believe they know what's causing Bryson's illness and think it can be reversed. You can join Bryson's family on their search for a medical miracle in Unlocking Bryson's Brain. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
The coronavirus pandemic has turned life as we know it upside down.
We're in the United States of America, and you think to yourself, how in the hell did we let this happen?
How are our communities, our jobs, and our daily lives changing? And where do we go from here?
We've spent billions of dollars hunting down terrorist cells. We don't do that with pandemics. That's the wrong approach.
America Interrupted, a new original podcast series from the PBS NewsHour, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And now we turn to the analysis of Shields and Brooks, that is syndicated columnist Mark Shields and New York Times columnist David Brooks. Hello to both of you. David, let's go right to what we've just been hearing from Lisa and Dan Bush in their extensive reporting, exhaustive reporting, talking to 74 former Biden staffers and coming away with no one saying they were aware of anything like what Tara Reid has alleged. What do you take away from this?
Well, they've taken, at least, and Dan have taken us as deeply into the Biden office at that time as I think it's possible to go. And so I think we have a pretty good sense of it. And it reveals that Joe Biden is a very transparent person. The culture they describe is certainly the culture I knew when I was covering Senator Biden and the person I know him to be. And it raises more skepticism about the claims. I would say this, and in addition, there's a Politico report looking into some of Tara Reid's past allegations in other cases, other parts of her life. And I think the bottom line is, if you were a person who was saying, should this issue be a problem for me in voting for Joe Biden, I think the arrow has moved into less of a problem. We don't know that it didn't happen. We can't know that. But certainly the degree of skepticism has to be a little higher because of this reporting.
And Mark, I mean, you're somebody who's covered this city for a long time. You've walked the halls of these Senate office buildings. What do you come away with here?
Well, I come away, first of all, with great admiration for both Lisa and Dan. I mean, 74 people on the record is remarkable. That meant a couple of hundred calls they had to make to get that. And I think it does confirm what has been sort of the emerging consensus among political people who don't have a dog in the fight, and that is, Joe Biden was 50 years old in 1993, and he's 27 years ago, and that suggesting that this was the one and only time in his entire life that he sexually assaulted a woman who has reported it, just seems increasingly unlikely. That's all. I mean, Tara Reid deserves a hearing, but I thought that Joe Biden's own statement, if I believed what was charged of me, I wouldn't vote for myself, and nobody should. I thought that was a reasonable conclusion.
Well, certainly the case is always open. We continue to report. If new information comes in, we certainly will report that as well. But I want to turn you both now to what we saw this week and come back to you, David. Anthony Fauci testifies on the Hill that it's a mistake to move too fast. We heard from the whistleblower Rick Bright, the scientist, who says he was pushed out because he was trying to get the administration to do more on COVID-19. On the other hand, you have President Trump saying we're going to move ahead no matter what. I mean, who has more credibility on this pandemic at this point?
This is not really a close race between Fauci and Donald Trump. Fauci is one of the heroes of American government over the last 20 years, and an extremely humble man, extremely direct man. And so I think he's right. I think he underscores the fact that you know, I keep saying we're not winning this. The number of deaths just is up in the 1,700, 2,000, day after day after day. It goes down in New York, but it's rising in other places. But one thing that strikes me is, not to politicize this too much, if you look at actual behavior, people lock themselves down before any politician took a move. And even in those states where the politicians are opening up, people are still locking down. And so one of the things that's been interesting to me is you look at the movement based on cell phone tracking. Red and blue states have the same amount of movement. The same number of people basically in state after state are staying home. And red and blue states, there's no correlation between whether it's a red and blue state and whether people are doing better or worse. And so I think the key decisions right now are not being made in state houses and certainly not in the White House. They're being made in living rooms as people decide, is it safe? Can I go out? And most people are trying to find a balance. But I'm sort of impressed that most people are being reasonably cautious right now.
And yet, Mark, again, the president, and he said it again today, we need to move ahead, whether we're ready or not, in the direction of opening up.
Yes, he did, Judy. And the president proves once again he's not actually strategic or tactical in his political fights that he engages in. He's visceral. He's instinctive. You should always, if you're going after somebody politically, go after somebody who's a lot weaker than you are politically or less popular. I mean, Democrats won 5 consecutive presidential elections running against Herbert Hoover because he was there in the Depression and unpopular as the Republican president. But he picked Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci. David mentioned he's been there since the Reagan years. But not only that, when in a presidential debate, when George H.W. Bush was asked to cite a contemporary American hero, he cited Dr. Anthony Fauci. And when his son had a chance to give the Medal of Freedom in 2008, he gave it to Dr. Anthony Fauci. So it's no surprise that in the poll the CBS News did yesterday, whom do you trust more on coronavirus information? Anthony Fauci stood at 62% with a majority of Republicans saying they trusted him. Donald Trump, at the same time, had a resounding 38% trust, 62% distrust. So I think this is a decision that has been made by voters already who do want solid, knowledgeable information from somebody without any agenda, politically or personally.
Well, meanwhile, as the three of us are talking right now, David, the House of Representatives getting ready to vote on a measure being pushed by the Democrats, $3 trillion in additional aid to people suffering as a result of COVID-19. The Republicans are pretty much uniformly against it. Even some Democrats say they think it's too much. The chairman of the Federal Reserve said this week, we need to do more for those for people who may end up with businesses that are gone or people who have lost their jobs. What are we to make at this point of moving ahead with a $3 trillion proposal?
Well, I think there's a mistake. It's a political ploy. I think it's a mistake to come together a proposal where you've had no negotiations with the other side, where it's clearly going to go nowhere in the Senate. It's just a sort of a political poster that you're putting up on the wall. I just think that's a mistake. At the same time, I think we're going to have to spend a lot more money. And the heart of this bill is correct, which is aid to states. State revenues have collapsed. State fiscal situations are disastrous right now, unlike any we've seen in this country's history. And if you care about the things states do, like schools or state universities or anything else states do, they need money. And this country started, Alexander Hamilton took on the state debt that they'd built up in the Revolutionary War, and he nationalized it. He gave them a bailout, essentially. And that's how this country started. That's the role of the federal government. And so shoveling money out to states is an absolutely necessary thing to do. Shoveling more money out to individuals who, you know, are wondering where they're going to get their new grocery bill is the right thing to do. I don't think it's useful to do it in a way that's just a sort of a political gesture.
So, Mark, what's the right approach?
Well, the right approach, Judy, is not that recommended by the Senate Majority Leader, who says we have not yet felt the urgency of acting immediately. This is in view of you mentioned Chairman Powell, no radical leftist, who pointed out that this is the most serious economic crisis the country has faced. certainly since the Great Depression, certainly since World War II, he said. And he pointed out, Judy, that 40% of the people of the country, households that were earning $40,000 a year or less in February, 40% of them lost their jobs in March. And these are real people. These are waiters, waitresses, hotel people, taxi drivers, nurses' aides, the people who bathe the sick in the hospitals and change their dressings. And they are really desperate, and they need help. And that's in this package. David's right. I disagree with him on the total politicization of it. You have to start somewhere. The Republicans say they don't want to do anything. Mitch McConnell says let the states go into bankruptcy. That is unacceptable. The states provide great services. We're talking about the people who are at the front line of providing, whether it's police or fire or first responders. So there's some political sweeteners in there, no question. There's some political gotchas in there, yes. But you have to begin somewhere and you start the debate.
Well, in any event, the Senate, we are told, won't be taking this up until June. But I want to conclude in less than 2 minutes, just quickly right now, with what happened with Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina this week. David, the FBI came to his house unannounced and said, we're going to take your cell phone. He is suspected of having traded on inside information on the pandemic. And meanwhile, the Georgia, another Republican senator, Kelly Loeffler of Georgia, is turning over. She says she's cooperating with investigators. How serious is all this? We've heard a little bit about it before, but now when the Senator Burr steps down as chair of the Intelligence Committee, it looks like something we pay attention to.
Well, the FBI does not raid a United States senator's home and seize a cell phone without some real cause for suspicion. And so I take this extremely seriously, both as a legal matter and just simply as an ethical matter. If you're chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, you don't do trading. You have your money in a blind trust. You don't take a moment of national crisis and think, oh, I can make some money off this. It's just not what you do as a leader. And so it reflects just, I don't know about the crime, but it reflects extremely poorly on the character of the senator.
And Mark, less than 30 seconds.
Less than 30 seconds. Judy, if in fact anybody made a quick buck off of inside information and something that has taken 85,000, approaching 85,000 American lives, we're talking about blood money. Richard Burr finds himself friendless in the White House. Why? Because in an ocean of political polarization in the United States Senate, his committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, has been an island of bipartisanship. And they have agreed and come to the conclusion that, yes, Russia did engage and interfere and subvert the election in 2016 on behalf of Donald Trump and against Hillary Clinton. So he will, the charges will stand on their own, but he will find himself without the support of the President of the United States, who feels he's been let down by Senator Burr.
Kind of a remarkable turn of events here at the end of this, another tumultuous week. David Brooks, Mark Shields, thank you both. Please stay safe.